Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back for the Amazing Race 33 finale recap. The Amazing Race 33 is empty like a pinata husk, but we are here now to scoop up all the pieces off of the ground and talk about what we just saw. Congratulations to the winners of the Amazing Race 33. It's Penn and Kim, who ran a fantastic race. We'll talk about the final two legs here today with our Amazing Race panel. First, joining us, a woman who I think must be beaming today to see her faves come out on top. Here's Jessica Lees. Jess, how are you?
Doing great, Rob. I stan a couple of legends. I called my shot. They're the winners.
You said in the preseason, I am going to aggressively stan the Holderness family. And I think maybe you might have sealed the deal for them, Jess.
I think it was my retroactive aggressive standing energy. Mm-hmm. Actually, Rob, no, we can take a little bit of credit for this.
Yes.
The three of us, we can take some credit for this because we got it straight from their mouths that they listened to our podcasts well before they were cast and used our material as study material before they went on the race.
Sure. They didn't really say like any place where it paid dividends, but we were along. We didn't screw it up. We didn't give them bad advice. Okay.
We did not. We're not the reason they got eliminated early.
Right.
But honestly, like what kind of, I was bad at asking them questions because I was standing a little too hard, but I was definitely not going to go ahead and ask them like, okay, name one thing we told you.
Enough about you. What about us? Come on. Come on. As Jess is alluding to, we have an Amazing Race exit interview podcast, interviews with all the top four teams up on robiswebsite.com and on our YouTube channel as well. If you want to view them, and let's bring in a man who had his own interviews with the top four. Of course, from parade.com in everyday street clothes. Here is Mike Bloom.
Yes, I am rocking the baby blue, of course, in honor of the Holderness family. Oh, crap. I got some Savlaki on this. You mind if I change for a hot second?
Oh, no.
He tricked us. He tricked us. We thought he was wearing normal clothes. His camera was on. And now,
I'm in my Christmas jammies. Ooh, dab, dab, dab. Whoa, do the robot. TikTok, TikTok, TikTok. Yes, content creators supported content creators. Congratulations to Kim and Penn. Smash that subscribe button, fam.
Yeah, here, let me do some Foley. Yeah.
Oh, that was them shattering the age ceiling because they're the oldest winners of all time.
Yeah.
Sorry. Now, what's the difference between Foley and just like a soundboard from a radio station?
Foley would be great if I had like a whole like box of like sound effects that I just like a cowbell and then like like a bag of chips that I was just like.
Yeah, oh, so you were a hoarder.
Metal.
Yeah. Sheet metal, oh, it's raining.
Exactly.
Is that thunder? Yeah. That would be great. That's what they used to do back in the old days of podcasting.
Yeah, back in the days of radio plays. That's how the maybe that should have been like that would have been your five holes. Like, okay, recreate the Lone Ranger.
Back on the first podcast in the 30s and 40s. That's how they used to do it. Okay.
Yeah, those were FDR's fireside chats were the earliest podcasts.
Right. Okay. So here we are to talk about it. Mike, how were your interviews with the top four?
They're fantastic. I'm going to just say overall, like, this was a really kick-ass group of teams.
Yeah.
They just seem like a really great group. I do wonder if part of it is, you know, a sense of unity from the fact due to the unprecedented circumstances in which they came back. They felt really bonded together, but not to say that a season shouldn't have drama or conflict in it, right? This isn't Phil Kogan's best friend's race, but I did like the ability for, like, these teams to come on, to still be competitive, but to still enjoy each other's company. So, yeah, had the opportunity to talk with Kim and Penn, to talk with Raquel and Kayla, to talk with Aruna and Natalia, and Doggo was solo today. Dusty by himself. Ryan, I believe, was on vacation the day that we were recording these interviews, but suffice it to say, Dusty was able to fill that time. He had a lot of stuff to say. So I believe when people are hearing this, at least half of them should be up at parade.com. But yeah, this is a really fun group of teams, some of which actually listen to this podcast, to Jess's point, some of which may have followed the advice of which we give. I guess we'll pull a Kim and say, you're welcome. And then we can just roll the end credits there.
Yeah. And we will have a full recap of the Amazing Race, but let me just quickly state about how it looked like that everybody got together for a finale party courtesy of Lulu and Lala. Jess, were you able to piece together what the night was like?
Well, I want to give a shout out to one of our PSR patrons managed to get into the VIP section of this party last night, and he was having a blast. I don't know why he was still on the Discord after a point, but thanks to Corey, we got a lot of great insight into what the party was like, how everybody was feeling. And of course, Kim and Penn posted to the Holderness family's Twitter account the footage of the reaction of their children when they found out their parents had won the race. But apparently, it was a raging party reminiscent of the Tarkon days, and I was very sad to not be in Miami last night.
Yeah. Jess, remember when you used to get the invite for the Amazing Race finale parties back in the day?
Rob, I want to... I only ever got a actual invite to two finale parties. The rest of them, like, pretty much anyone could go if you paid to get a ticket.
I mean, listen, two is greater than zero.
Yeah, it's true. It's a non-zero amount. And I did get invited to, like, we all got collectively invited to other parties that were not in New York, but if it's not in the Northeast, I kind of can't go anymore. So I'm happy to have had a correspondent on the ground who was able to tell us how the party was.
Yeah. My Facebook was like, hey, do you want to repost this from 8 years ago today? The finale of Amazing Race 23? Like, okay. I don't know. No, thank you. Not really.
Two parties, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my ten seasons ago. So there you go.
Yeah. It was interesting. I do believe said patron had actually tried to, like, spread a little bit of his own tinfoil hat theories of, like, well, you know, I don't know if Kim and Penn, you know, they would be at home celebrating with family if they had won. This wouldn't be the case, but nope. Surprise, surprise. Once again, when we thought Raquel and Kayla had it, they had home state advantage and everything, celebrating in Florida. Penn and Kim passed them. I mean, look, let me just say, I love this finale, specifically the final leg. It was a really, really fun time. The closest finale we have had in years. And just in general, I really don't have that much to quibble with the leg design.
Okay.
Proper. I thought even the stuff in Portugal, I thought were really fun cultural tasks.
Yeah, I loved it. I want to go back and put my own tinfoil hat on things. Is it possible that Kim and Penn stepped off from throwing a finale party and had other racers do it so as not to cast a spoilery light on anything? Because we know Amazing Race 23, God love them, Jason and Amy threw this rager
right
in Providence. They're like, we're just throwing a party because we're excited. Like, yeah, sure you are, guys. You're throwing this giant party, renting out an entire hotel because you were celebrating the fact that you came in third place. That really happened.
I think this might be a little bit more Occam's razor in that Lulu and Lala, they are party people. I feel like they are probably more likely to be throwing a party. Penn and Kim are more of adults. Like, I feel like, you know, aren't like, hey, let's throw a rager.
I mean, I think they'd probably make a YouTube video about throwing a rager that mm-hmm. ended up not being a rager. But yeah, that's a fair point. And like Lulu and Lala, to their credit, like they had a beverage sponsor at this thing.
Yeah.
And it was that like weird. I'm sure you've seen ads for it because Paramount Plus is lousy with ads for this thing. It was at the Guitar Hotel.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Was it the guy that serves them limoncello in Greece when they had that one leg?
I think I would have gotten those people. Mm-hmm. I might not have invited the cheese guy, but everybody else.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we had a 2-hour amazing race to talk about. Yeah. So, all right. Let's start with the headline then. I know that over the years both of you have had issues with the final leg of the Amazing Race. Just what did the show get right with this leg?
What the show got right with this leg is everything was something you had to solve or get through. It was not everything required work. And, you know, I'm not one of these like Protestant work ethic people that's like hard work is the answer to everything. But when the centerpiece of your final leg is be the first person to the giant thing you're jumping off of, then there is no suspense in it, because as soon as you're that person and you just like cruise from place to place, there's no chance for another team to catch up. Mm-hmm. And I felt like everything in here, I think maybe the last time I saw a leg that was this well designed in the finale, I think 27 would be in that conversation. Like having multiple things where you had to multiple memory tasks, multiple like brain puzzles, make it easier for a team that's in the back to come up and overtake the other team. And you saw the order, you saw the at least the 1 and 2 order switch many, many times over throughout the course of this final leg. And that up until the final minute, up until the final time that official said, you know, game, set, match, I did not know who was going to win. I had my suspicions. Certainly, I have been calling my shot all season, mm-hmm. but it was like it could have been anybody's game. And even at the point where they finished that memory task, I'm like, oh, maybe there's another task. And I honestly didn't feel the same, like, you know, that usual Amazing Race cadence of like this, 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 and then the end. I was like, oh, maybe there's something else. It was, they kept that tension taut for the entire leg. And I loved that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Penn told me he counted 8 lead changes, and I guess editing might have slighted that a little bit, because it really did seem like, from my perspective...
Did he have his glasses on when he was counting?
Oh, sorry, it was infinity. It was on the side. He just didn't... He was reading it from the wrong direction.
I also got a lesson in glasses today also from Penn.
Oh, good.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Well, listen, I don't know when Direct Buy is going to become like a sponsor of Rob as a podcast, but Penn could be like your spokesperson.
I mean, honestly, it was nice that Penn said that he's the, you know, much, much older than Rob, because I think he's maybe 5 years older than Rob.
Okay, I mean, look, that's considerable.
I guess maybe more as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the age of my son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I really enjoyed about this final leg is actually
just trying to make me later days already.
You're the oldest one on the podcast, mm-hmm. man, by 11 whole months.
Mm-hmm. But I think that she brought up a very good point about the multiple tasks. And I think especially comparing it to last season, where it was like there were some of those tasks, but there was one big luck task stuck in the middle of that. That was where Will and James just took the lead and never looked back. I think what really is the difference here, and I think what has to be the key now in every Amazing Race finale, is I know I said, oh, we haven't experienced this close of a finale in a long time. I mean, Amazing Race 30 had an incredibly tight finale as well. What did both of them have in common? A memory task right at the finish line as mm-hmm. the very last thing to do. Yeah. And I think correlation might equal causation here, is that if the teams are running a relatively solid race, even if there are sort of stratifications and teams falling out of it, that final memory task is an ability to have everybody catch up and serve as like an epic bunching point, when by and large, the vast majority of Amazing Race finales are boring, are mm-hmm. very straightforward, where one team takes the lead in one of these tasks in the beginning or middle of the leg, just doesn't look back. And so I think while it might be unfortunately unfair to this first place team that like their lead might be squandered because of it, it makes the ending exciting when it's really supposed to be of just putting something there that makes them stop short and allow time for other teams to be able to catch up. And in the case of Kim and Penn, have a literal pitch perfect memory of these things that really benefits them and allows them to surge ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I I'm a little concerned about this, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Kim and Penn were perhaps maybe the most prepared team that has ever come into the Amazing Race. And we've heard about teams that have maintained spreadsheets or, you know, called up podcasters to get the lay of the land before going on the show. But this is the first time that I feel like this is a whole new level. And Mike, we talked about this in the tar pit a few weeks ago, where it's like a James Holzhauer situation where he is better than everyone at Jeopardy because he just made it his life goal. He read middle grade fact books in like the triple digits, mm-hmm. and had this whole like thing on betting strategy. And he did the bouncing around in the categories to the point where the only person that was able to beat him is someone who literally wrote a PhD thesis on Jeopardy. And I wonder if now are we going to start to see that sort of competition? Like have Penn and Kim raised the bar?
Yeah. I mean, between that and Will and James, right? Like mm-hmm. we are now two of teams that did a lot of good homework. And we talk about this a lot with Survivor, Rob, idea of, do you have do you purposely reuse the same puzzles and reward people who prepare for it? And I wonder if the Amazing Race is going to continue to do that, or is it going to be, let's create more equalizing tasks that you can't study for?
Yeah, it's really an interesting question. I think that probably is a thing that we should look at across like the entire realm of competition reality, because I think that as like these like audiences dwindle, not to say that the ratings are bad, but times like the shows like Survivor had 30 million and 20 million and 10 million. And now as it's sort of like, okay, now really we're talking to the base here. So the people watching the show are also the same people that are the super fans. Like, I feel like that the casuals like make up like less of a percentage of the audience than they did once upon a time. So the people that are applying for the show like know the shows better and better. Whereas on Survivor, especially, you don't have one person on the show that isn't like a 8 out of 10 Survivor fan that goes on the show. Right. We used to have people that's like, what is this show? What is this? Where they'd be, you know, zeros and ones, like make up half the cast on these shows. And it's interesting of like on The Amazing Race now to see, you know, how big of a competitive advantage it is to be the super fans.
And or I would almost say not just how big of a competitive advantage is it, but how much is the show going to lean into that? Because we've heard, like, it used to be that there was a curse of the super fan. I don't know if you recall, like 10 seasons ago, if a team went in and their whole story was, we love The Amazing Race and we are obsessed with it, and that team was guaranteed to go out early. And I don't know if that was just because, like, are they really that big of super fans, or was the show like struggling to put them in a bucket? And now it's like everybody is in that bucket now. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe to some degree that's always been true, but I think we're in a new strata of super fanhood.
Mm-hmm. I don't think necessarily like on this season of The Amazing Race, I think that all 11 of the teams were super fans, but we definitely had teams that were, you know, much bigger fans than others.
Yeah, nobody is doing like the, except for Kim, is doing the Daniel Strunk-esque spreadsheet, right, of like all the tasks that were on The Amazing Race. So it's a good question as to, do you have to be that devoted? Like, chronicling, I think, is the question of, is that necessary now to really do well in The Amazing Race? Because we're 2-for-2 in that aspect. And you had a team like Colin and Christy were just naturally good. Jessica and Cody were not, I would not necessarily say, they were certainly not brought on as Amazing Race fans. No. But then you have someone like Scott from season 29, who very much was in that mold too. So it's interesting to compare those skill sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Should we talk about the first half of this episode of The Amazing Race, where we got to see the teams race through Portugal? Very unusual for the season to see a one-city stop here just for one leg of The Amazing Race.
Well, Lisbon's a flyover city, right?
I mean, it makes sense. And they weren't in Lisbon. They were in, like, small-town Portugal. But it makes a lot of sense because it's a stop on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a lot of these legs. I think they used to have like one per season would be a leg in an airport hub. Like, how many times have they been to Dubai? And the whole reason is just because that's a place that you frequently fly through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was one of those cases of what's on the way back. Mm-hmm. We know where our final leg is and we know where the leg before that is. What can we stick in the middle?
Yeah, so stop by for the day, row some boats, do some painting. You'll have a great time.
Mm-hmm. So I started to feel like that maybe this was not going to be a victorious run for Ryan and Dusty, where I started to feel like that Ryan and Dusty got a little bit of a villain edit here in the finale. Did anybody else feel that way?
I certainly felt like they were imploding. I don't know about villain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's tough because villain... I don't know. Villain edits are tough on The Amazing Race because villains imply that you're like doing something negative to another team.
Yeah. No, it's just in terms of their language of how they were becoming less the underdog and more that they were, their hunting instincts were taking over.
Yeah, I mean, Dusty does use a lot of predator language in a manner of speaking, right? Like, he essentially is, he was David Attenborough himself. He was talking himself up as the lion this entire time.
Right, here's Dusty talking about how that they are actually the team to watch.
Adversity really brings out character in people, and I would not want us behind you hunting you down. We will find one of these lambs in front of us, and we will feast.
Are you saying that he would be on them like a pack of hounds?
Yeah. Yeah, he's ready to feast on some of the other teams.
I want Dusty to do Shakespeare. He has such a weird... He's just an interesting way of talking.
Be great. We support Dusty doing anything.
Yeah, I really like anything he does, I will tune in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So... I did like Penn and Kim talking about how they want to be there at the end, and they don't want to be just like one of the teams that are doing like the golf clap for the other teams that are coming through. That was another one of the great like meta moments they had on the season.
Yeah, they're really two for two, right? Between Kim calling out the sound effect last week and now them doing the impression of the team sort of clapping at the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
Also brings up that fantastic moment, which only came to mind for me recently because Maggie Morgan watched The Amazing Race 16 and like, the one time that didn't happen where Carol and Brandy like called out Miss South Carolina at the finish line for like U-turning them. And it was one of the rare moments where they did not, ironically enough, do the beauty pageant clap of it all. But otherwise, yeah, that's pretty much the B-roll that they get of these teams being like, woo, nondescript team, come on.
Yeah.
Because they don't film those when the teams are running down the finish line.
Yeah.
I've never, and this is probably speaks to their background as people who've worked in television extensively, I've never heard a team break the fourth wall as consistently and as often as they did.
Yeah.
And it's really, it speaks to how well they know the show, because I think there's a lot of, again, like maybe the last two winners are the only ones that we've seen really not just tell us that they love the show, but show us that they love the show.
Yeah.
Between Will and James having footage of themselves walking around with bottles on their head the night the episode aired to Kim like picking apart the tiniest bits of like, this is how they're going to tell our story.
To the theme song in the premiere when they talked about it. Are they saying mashed potatoes in the theme song? To even
oatmeal, Rob.
Oatmeal. Sorry. Mashed potatoes. I don't know where I got that from.
Well, and then that's the other part. Maybe the mashed potatoes.
Oatmeal. Yeah. What are you fighting? You're debating which is better.
It's interesting though. Because
dental work.
Yeah.
Does that also indicate a different editing style for The Amazing Race as well? Because I don't want to keep bringing this back to Survivor 41, but Survivor 41 has certainly got more meta about like, we do this on this show, or even back in season 40 when, you know, they keep in a Michelle Fitzgerald comment of like, I need this, like you need a blue shirt and a pair of khakis. I like that when a show is able to lean in a bit and on its tropes.
Well, Phil has already always broken the fourth wall and talked to the audience at home about setting things up. So we always had that. But it is interesting. Even Penn at the finish line said, like, hey, can we give it up for the camera people?
I loved that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we get a shot of this? Like, get these guys. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fantastic. It was like... we know, and because we've spoken to enough racers and we've spoken to Phil enough times, we know how much goes into the show. But I think there's so much that this season has shown us about what it takes to make this program.
Yeah.
That we've never, I think the audience has never had to think about. And between, I would almost, I don't know if this is like, I'm trying to find patterns where there are none, but between like zooming out and showing the crew and being really aware that the crew is working so hard. And like, there's a point where, you know, where Phil's given his spiel, like as a flight attendant, you can see behind him that, you know, there, we have the six racers in front of him. Behind him, there are at least like 100 people.
Yeah.
And I love that we're finally able to, really think about what a huge, complicated thing this show is to make and be a little bit more, exercise a little more gratitude for it.
Yeah. I think that we are definitely like trending in the trajectory of like on these shows, like pulling back the curtain, you know, even more to the point where, you know, we're seeing more and more of the stuff that goes into making the show. I don't know necessarily if it's good or bad, but I definitely think it's interesting as this thing continues to evolve.
I mean, do you think, is that an externality of the pandemic of like, oh, people have worked so hard, we want to show it? Could it be that because we're in a day and age where like we all can all be content creators, right? We all have something in our pockets that can do it, that it's like that's production has become something that's more interesting to people?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the exact, like, we'd probably have to have somebody do like a think piece on like why this is happening, but we're definitely like moving more and more into that trajectory.
We need like Chuck Klosterman to break this all down.
Jess, have you read the 90s?
Not yet. Not yet. I have it on my table. It's in my queue. I definitely want to.
I am halfway through on the audiobook and I am greatly enjoying it.
That was a good year.
Yes. Yes. We're halfway through. Okay. So let's take a look at we're going to go to our first task of that. Get to what, the big red flag?
Yeah, it's one of these classic, you're up top on something, spot the flag down below. Usually this can be actually very difficult for some teams for whatever reason. Kim and Penn don't have a problem with this one. Little did they know that there really be bookends of visual challenges coming up in this leg. Not really anything of note here. Everyone does fine. I do find it interesting that I don't know if Raquel and Kayla and Ryan and Dusty wanted to necessarily help each other, but it was interesting that because they got there at the same time, they had to kind of be like, okay, I guess we'll help each other find the flag because we're in proximity and it would be awkward and we can't really like hint to the other partner that the flag is there and not let the other team know about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is going to take the teams off to a roadblock called Who Wants to Go Exploring? Okay, our teams, we're going to have to determine who is a Portuguese explorer and who is a famous person.
That really doesn't give you much to go on. Like, that's one of the most ambiguous questions I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, what does this name sound like? Except for Cristiano Ronaldo, or unless someone was like a big, I don't know, stan of the UN. I don't know how many people would not just take the, all right, I guess I'll make a random non-Ronaldo guess and see if I'm right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, this is like this is one of those arenas, and you guys know me and like my trivia brain, which is not the same thing as being smart, but I have no idea what everybody knows and what everybody does not know. Like what is obscure and what is common knowledge.
Would you be good at this?
Yeah. Well, I knew two of the explorers off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like Diaz and Da Gama are like, they're known explorers. That's mm-hmm. a thing. Like, I think that would not be the hard part. I think mm-hmm. the rowing is the harder part. And if you've never rowed a boat,
yeah,
rowed, that's a past participle that I've never heard until Arun used it. I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
A rowed.
Yeah. I mean, you could also call this a literal roadblock.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. So when I spoke with Arun and Natalia, Arun said that his regret was that he didn't jump out of the boat and pull the boat.
Are you allowed to?
I don't know.
I mean, that was my thought when he's like, I have to get back. My first thought was, okay, just bail. But apparently he had to get the boat back into the dock. Yeah, I would say if you can't row it, might as well tow it.
Mm-hmm. What, did you just make that up, Mike?
Yeah.
Put it on a t-shirt.
In the RJP store.
Yeah, some more Mike Blue merch.
If you can't row it, you might as well tow it. I'm going to send it to Arun free of charge.
Yeah. Mike Bloom's new catchphrase.
Not reimbursed, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, really, you know, Kim is like, all right, what, you know, what the hey? I'll go exploring. Boom. Gets in a boat. Nails it.
I mean, she admits this was a lucky guess, though. This was like she picked it purely by aesthetic choice, and she ends up getting it right on the first try. But yeah, I mean, I like this because, again, this was almost a detour within a roadblock. Right. You could take the Raquel method of let me search out the name, or you could take the Ryan method of just try to brute force it going back and forth. That's what I really liked about both roadblocks mm-hmm. here was that there was sort of inherent within it a more slower brain oriented option and then a quote unquote faster, more physically oriented option.
Mm-hmm. This is something I want to see more of on Amazing Race, honestly. Like I want problems that you can solve more than one way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes for really interesting TV. And it's also, I mean, I know it's another level of difficulty on what is already a difficult show to design, but I want to be able to, you're always placing yourself in that situation. I want to be able to say, this is how I would have done it. Not like, would I have been able to do this? You know?
One of the things from this roadblock that I felt like they did not really explain on the show was that, okay, we saw where Ryan and Dusty were with Raquel and Kayla. They were ahead of Arun and Natalia, who are famously the worst navigators on the show. Somehow, Arun and Natalia get to this task minutes before Ryan and Dusty. And we didn't get any explanation of what happened.
We did, actually. There was one brief thing. So it seemed like the latter three teams were essentially like in a little line together. And there was one point where there was a T-turn. There was like a turn left or a turn right. The right way to go was right. I'm sorry. I'm giving like Natalia-esque directions here. Laurel mm-hmm. and Hardy-esque. Mm-hmm. The right, you have to turn right to go in the correct direction. Raquel and Kayla went right. Ryan and Dusty went to the left.
Ah.
And Natalia saw they were going in the wrong direction and turned right. We saw it briefly. There was a little bit of a map to mm-hmm. show it, but that's how Ryan and Dusty ended up. And then there was this whole thing, and there's a secret scene about it where like, they couldn't find a spot to turn around, so they did like an Austin Powers-esque 23-point turn.
They love Austin Powers.
Yeah, exactly. Dusty's favorite trilogy of all time. No wonder they wound up in third place. He just loves trilogies that much. But
loves trilogies. I came very close to saying to Dusty today that I know you came in third and picked up the bronze, but I know you love gold. I didn't have the heart to bring it up.
I mean, it's a miracle we got through that interview without like bringing up any dog.
He was a good sport. He really was.
He was a very good sport. He was a very good boy. He was a very good boy.
Good sport. Yes. Good sport. Yeah. Ryan and Dusty, again, they were trying to track the other teams down. They felt like they were, moving ahead of, they already had gotten ahead of Arun and Natalia when they got to the fortress. Yeah, to look for the flag. And here's Ryan and Dusty talking about that.
Ryan and I, the lions, went hunting and we made a kill with Raquel and Kayla behind us. But now we are hunting for the main prize, the Cape Buffalo. Pin and Kim, we are coming for blood in first place.
I mean, that's literally the first time anybody on the show has said that Penn and Kim are the team to beat. So there's that. But there's also
the first time someone audibly roared like they're the MGM lion on the Amazing Race.
But this is not the first time we've heard. Is this their catchphrase?
Gobble gobble, we're about to eat, baby.
Yeah.
Why are they saying gobble gobble all the time?
They're like hungry, hungry hippos, actually. They're just like eating the teams that they get in front of.
How soon did this film until Thanksgiving? Like, I'm pretty sure this was October, right? So maybe they were just hungry for that.
I don't know. But it's very interesting. So that's the evolution of Ryan and Dusty. Okay, becoming more animalistic as the season went on. All right.
I don't know. They started at about a 9 on the animal scale, and I don't know that they went that much harder.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they finished at a 10.
They finished at a 10. Yeah, this went to 10, right?
I think we're splitting hairs. When you make an onomatopoeia-esque roaring noise sincerely about stalking the first place team, I do think that is at least an 11, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, going on to leg 11, I guess. All right. So Raquel, she gets through. Arun is really going to struggle in the boat, that he is just spinning around in a circle for a while.
Well, that's a problem. That's a hazard of not knowing how to row a boat, because if you don't have both oars kind of in sync with each other, doing the same motion at the same time, that's exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very much like he was trying to like do one, he would be turning right, and then he'd be doing the other one to try to straighten out. But yeah, it's about moving them both at once. And poor Arun, it not to make this an age thing, but just it very much reminded me of Gretchen in The Amazing Race 7, of like sitting in the elephant being like, we got a bad elephant, just like a situation where someone is hapless, him spinning in the middle of this poor marina, as Dusty compares him to essentially going down the drain, getting passed by everybody.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah. So Ryan, his approach is going to be, okay, I know I can row the boat. And even he struggled a little bit at first, but he gets the hang of it. He says, I'm just going to, you know, keep taking the boat down until I get the right answer. But then after he comes back that he's wrong, he comes back and spots the Vasco da Gama boat. Vasco da Gama, baby. But Arun at the same time is saying like, oh, da Gama. I need to switch boats. I need to get to the other boat.
Well, that's where the part of it comes in where you had to actually look at the boats.
Right.
And I think a lot of people were kicking themselves. Like, everybody knows if you say Vasco da Gama, if I even say it to you two, you know he's an explorer, right?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that one might have been a little more hidden than the others. I think the first person to see that is going to take it.
Right, because it would have been a little more difficult if it's, okay, here's a list of explorers, and you have to identify who is
with
Portuguese,
right.
But since
which of these flags is in the EU.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's also tricky because, you know, back in the exploration era, you had a lot of people that were one nationality sailing under the flag of whoever funded them, and sometimes you don't even really know for sure. Like, they say Columbus was from Genoa, but the Catalonians claim him, and you know,
now nobody claims him.
Yeah, no, he's kind of garbage, but all of these guys were kind of garbage.
Yeah, so
Ronaldo, he's beautiful.
No, yes. Cristiano Ronaldo is great. I'm sure the UN guy also great, but the explorers were all kind of garbage.
Yeah, Kayla, what did she say? She would leave the race to go in the Cristiano Ronaldo boat.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to explore him.
Okay.
His body is a wonderland.
Just leave that. Let that sit. And so Arun, he was very upset that Ryan was going off with his boat.
You got my boat!
I just love that. Oh, no, like, he took my boat! Okay. All right. So Ryan gets the Vasco da Gama boat, that he is right. Arun, he's going to end up switching boats. We get to the paint the door task. Okay. We have Phil calls canned fish the world's oldest fast food.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
I was reading something about canned food this week.
Yes. What was it? Probably wasn't a happy story, right?
We were reading a book of like how simple machines are. The chapter was about how simple machines combine to make kitchen gadgets. And they were talking about the can opener.
Yeah.
Because that's what my child finds interesting. And they talked about how canned food was created in the late 18th century, but nobody invented a can opener until like the middle of the next century.
Yes.
Because the inventor of the can just said, why don't you just get like a hammer and a spike to open your can?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought I was going to say like, well, if people really need it, they'll invent a can opener.
Yeah, it's they'll fine. Eventually be able to get into this. In
necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like fast food to me is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. So people collect the sardine cans and then paint the door. What do you think about paint the door as a task?
I mean, fun. I like painting the door as a task is fun. I always like detail oriented things, especially when it is a little puzzle like as to like spot the difference. I am intrigued by the idea of we love these sardine cans so much. You're going to know it when you knock on my door. Like, you know what household you're entering, baby.
Yeah. I mean, Mike, that are you saying that you don't have like chicken of the sea on your front door?
Well, not since maybe Jessica Simpson has that painted on there, but I don't know about me.
So this task, okay, everything has to do it, you know, paint by number, very much attention to detail. The thing that really got me was Ryan and Dusty. I feel like that they have an axe to grind here. Jess, I thought it was very unfair that Ryan and Dusty had to paint the doorknob, but I feel like that all the teams didn't have to paint the doorknob.
Well, they had a marked off area. And I think a lot of these, it was sort of luck of the draw. Mm-hmm. I agree with you there. But the door was like, you had like the whole area marked off that you had to paint. And on the other ones, the door was not in the designated area. So it was kind of a gotcha moment. But also the, you couldn't necessarily tell from looking at the can which one was going to be easier to paint. Is it possible that Dusty and Ryan's was a little bit easier to paint, but so they threw in that you also had to paint the doorknob?
I don't know, but you don't paint the doorknob. That's not a thing.
Ah, but Rob.
That's not a thing, unless you're a lunatic.
I don't know. It would seem to me like a big old brass knob would stick out from my aesthetic design, right? I want it to blend in with the fish.
Sure. You just have to make sure you don't paint the like part at the base of the doorknob so it gets stuck and you can't use it anymore. Mm-hmm.
Jess, have you ever seen a painted doorknob?
I'm sure I've seen a painted doorknob at some point in my life. I don't think that's a thing that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was like, this is not fair for Ryan and Dusty. Justice that, look, this is, you know, justice for Ryan and Dusty. These guys deserve to catch a break.
Yeah, they deserve justice.
Yes. So I didn't think that was.
Every dog has its day.
Every dog has its day.
Yeah, jury's out on this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that my thought on this painting task was you could ruin it beyond recognition. Mm-hmm. Like there was a possibility you could F up that door so badly that you would have to like, they must've had extras. They had to have had extras because you could have had to start over from the beginning.
Yeah. Or they do like a Monsters Inc. style. They take the door out and they put another one in and just say like, no, you're doing the mermaid one now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was like the nice bookends with the first task of the season where we had sort of like the arts and crafts task to start off the race.
And imagine Michael and Mo, if they made it this far, like they'd be, I don't know, painting the judge. They'd be painting the floor.
They'd be painting the actual sardine can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, like, I did it.
Let's paint it to match the door.
Mm-hmm.
We did it. We got the door on the sardine can.
Honestly, no. I think that should have been a possible solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get your... They just have to be the same. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Raquel and Kayla, they end up getting through first. Eventually, Kim and Penn, they end up coming or departing a little bit after that. Ryan and Dusty are getting stuck on the doorknob. But the probably more interesting thing that happens on the way out is that Kayla forgets the map, Jess.
Yep. And we have spoken to them at length about forgetting the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think another team, like any other team on the field at that moment, if that had happened to them, it might have destroyed them.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
This was a little bit of a nothing burger, in my opinion, or I don't know, what's a nothing sardine, perhaps, in that they had a little bit of a tiff about it, but at the end of the day, they stopped for 2 minutes to grab one from a gas station. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it would have been much more of a risky choice to leave it behind if it's like, okay, now there won't be any other opportunity to get a map for the rest of the leg. Instead, it was more so, okay, do we want to go back 5 minutes to get it? Or do you want to just take 30 seconds to pull over to this gas station and get another one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got over very quickly. I just thought it was a very funny confessional where they talked about it, where, Kayla could tell, like, Kayla really had screwed that up. And then she's like, oh, okay, all right. We got it. We got it on the map. It was good. It was a good moment for them. Yeah. Okay.
Well, she could afford to be funny about it because they did get over it so quickly.
They got over it. Okay.
I mean, that's really one of their testaments. It's like whenever something bad happened, I find it so interesting on the previous slam when Phil's like, Raquel and Kayla screwed up a bunch. But like every time we saw them, whether it was, you know, Kayla getting frosting on her shirt or the whole fracas with, oh, we're so good at navigating. And then they drove in the wrong direction. Like they always played it off really well. And I asked them about this, and this was clearly something purposeful. That's just who they are as people, that they sort of just take adversity and they laugh about it. So I'm happy that they brought that in there, because I do think other teams, including on this season, if they were faced with the same thing, would get a bit ugly instead of just, oh yeah, we'll be fine.
We get a roadblock. Who's down for the count? I'm interested to know what you both thought about this task, because I thought that it was interesting in that it seemed, very difficult to do. And I was thinking, like, there must have been, like, a hack. And I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of, like, it's like the genius of, like, okay, there must be a way to solve it, even if you can't see that far. But I don't think there was.
Yeah, it felt to me like they had something else designed for this. Mm. And then they went to the people that owned the monastery, and the monks were like, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, wait, where have you been? Greece? France? No, you stay in this little rectangle. Yeah. You don't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't touch the walls. Are you kidding me? This is an old thing.
You wait, what cheese?
Yeah.
No, get those maggots away from me.
Wait, so you want to paint what on the columns? No. No, we're not doing that. Yeah, go paint some doors where in the city. But there's
a historic landmark.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you no respect?
All right. So, all right. Penn is there first. He's trying, and we see that, you know, for Penn, this is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, well, as he explained to you, Rob, in old age, your eyesight starts to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and there's nothing you can do about it. It just is.
Nothing you can do about it. I mean, that was kind of a downer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think death comes for us all eventually, Rob.
Oh my God. Wow. This podcast took a dark turn.
Really did. It's as dark as the shadows on one side of those columns.
Yeah. From dark turn, let me go back to the U-turn. Mike, you referenced the U-turn earlier in the show. It's interesting, and we haven't really talked about it. This was a season with no U-turns. I believe first season without a U-turn since season 12, since the introduction of the U-turn. How are we feeling about a U-turnless season 33?
I'm fine with it for this leg, just because of how unorthodox things were. I feel it's similar to me about, like, the staggered starts. Is like, I could understand why this leg had special circumstances. I would like to put it back, just because I think in a season that does not have much drama, that's a fun way to inject some stuff in there. I know that Ryan and Dusty naturally fell to the back of the pack, but that could have been something really interesting if there was instead an opportunity to U-turn them there. In fact, when Dusty talked to me, he was like, yeah, I was pretty sure if a U-turn popped up at all that we knew we'd be U-turned at some point. So I think it ended up working out here, but it should be noted specifically when it came to like the last five legs or something, there was very little change between the top group and the bottom group. And I do wonder if adding things in like the U-turns, especially if they're running the show in a similar format moving forward of like self-driving, you know, all in one city, two in a country type of thing, it might be more advantageous to throw in something like a U-turn that can help jumble up spots more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible, Mike, but I also, there are very few points like, and this is, again, results-oriented thinking, and it's based on like how it shook out, which is something that, you know, they would never have known going in. But I can think of very few points where putting a U-turn down would have made a big difference in how things shook out. Like there was not, you didn't have a lot of opportunities for somebody to pull a fast one on like Ryan and Dusty. Was maybe there was one chance you could have, and everybody else was just like, they're up at the front. And I don't see a team that knows they're coming in first place. I don't see them using the U-turn, especially not among this bunch that knows their strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be an interesting thing to talk about some with some of the teams. You know, did they talk about, you know, if there's a U-turn, what are we planning to do? You know, especially with, you know, another thing that would be interesting to talk about with some of the teams might be like after watching season 32 of The Amazing Race, talking about like, okay, well, like, how are we playing this if this comes up? Because that was such a big deal of the teams that were working together, what they were going to do. So interesting questions to ask the racers if we have the opportunity.
Yeah, I saw a comment on Reddit that I thought was really interesting related to that, where they said, can you imagine this count the columns task in season 32?
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody would just run out and be like, it's 106.
106!
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They must have been, I think that was probably the reason you had to run so far to give the answer.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we see Penn is working on it. Here comes Eagle Eyes Kayla,
who ironically enough is also wearing glasses. So maybe it's just prescriptions. Maybe they need to be replaced. But I mean, if you're talking about hacking the challenge, I don't know if this is hacking the challenge, Rob, but it seemed like the way to do it, because we saw both. We saw Kayla get it on the first try, and we see Penn eventually adopt this method of like bunching, right? It's almost like what I equate this challenge to is the how many jelly beans are in a jar type of counting, right? Mm-hmm. That challenge that we sometimes saw in Big Brother of, okay, if this is the size of 20 columns, approximately how many do you think could fit in there? Because like Penn said, it was a bit of a vanishing point where eventually you kind of just had to guesstimate the ones that were in the distance. And so I do wonder how much of it was plain counting versus like, all right, I can estimate how many this is, so let me just try to, you know, simplify the distance between everything and make an assumption based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's also the angle of once you're close or once you feel like you're close to get it on the exact number, you just run back and forth a bunch of times and give different numbers, which I think was something Penn was doing at some point.
Yeah, that was textbook trial and error for him. Yeah. I was like, all right, well now, he literally says, now it's going to be a running challenge. And it was only, I would say only, you know, with my unathletic ass here, but like it was only a quarter mile to there and back. So
I was surprised. We saw Penn and then also Dusty guessed odd numbers.
That's interesting as well. I wonder if they overthought that, right? And they're like, oh, perhaps they think that we think it'll be an even number. So they'll actually make it an odd number because that's the trick behind these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if I was like trialing and erroring, I think I would have tried all the even numbers first.
I don't know. How symmetrical were these monks?
I don't know. Okay.
I mean, the first thing I would have done is counted one side, multiplied it by two and see if that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. All right. So we see Kayla gets it on the first try. Then Penn eventually is going to get it. It seems like that we have a little bit of drama about Raquel and Kayla getting lost, going to the lighthouse, but
there's one path. It's very odd. They're like, are we going in the right direction? It is odd though, because like the Misty Mountains-esque fog is rolling in too, so they don't know what happens. But as soon as they see Penn and Kim, they're like, okay, I guess we're going in the right direction, so let's keep running. And so they end up finishing for the first place and second time in a row.
Yeah. So they get a trip to St. Lucia.
That's where I went for my honeymoon. It's
Mike, could you give any recommendations?
Yeah, so they talk about the sulfur baths. We went there. We went to like the little springs that had
What's a sulfur bath?
So it's one of those like natural hot springs where they have like the bubbling mud coming out of it. And so it was a very fun
like a
time.
Survivor reward.
Exactly. Like it's the final five of Survivor Borneo. You know, we had just we were about to go to the bar and watch the first episode of Survivor. Jeff Probst was about to put a blindfold on me. That was what I channel when you go to St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So then we get Penn and Kim. They check in. They're number two. They need to be considered a real threat, people.
I mean, I've been saying it for weeks.
I mean, yeah.
The show didn't want to admit it.
I mean, what did they finish? Like 1-1-2, 1-1-1 down the stretch here?
What I will say is I do think when it came to this season of The Amazing Race, I think I really love this final three because to me, the first third was Ryan and Dusty. The second third was Penn and Kim, and the third was Raquel and Kayla.
Oh, interesting.
I think in terms of dominance, where I think each one of those three teams, again, with the exception of maybe Ryan and Dusty in the middle there, none of these three teams had major struggles, but I do think each team sort of had their peak performance, with the exception of also then Kim and Penn at the very end there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eventually, Dusty is going to get it. Ryan, at one point, he's like, oh, this is going to take a while, but we went right to commercial. And then we came back. I'm like, Ryan and Dusty got this.
I mean, we know that rule.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You show somebody struggling with something and you cut to commercial, mm-hmm. they're going to solve it 5 seconds later.
Yep. Ryan and Dusty get it. They are team number three. And then it's like that's all she wrote.
Yep.
The cat has lost all nine lives. Mm-hmm. The dog has its day.
Yeah.
And Arun and Natalia are finally gone. They're happy, though. I mean, as Arun said, like, he cried the first time he got eliminated, but he can't this time because they got so many chances when they really shouldn't have gotten one in a very different circumstance on the race.
Mm-hmm. Just to go back to Ryan and Dusty for a moment, they said that, you know, Phil was like, oh, well, nobody wants to run with you guys. And what Dusty said, I believe, they came on The Amazing Race to drink beers and kick ass, and the cooler is empty. Pretty sure that's a Stone Cold Steve Austin line.
Well, I thought is the chew gum and kick ass Stone Cold Steve Austin, or is the drink beers one that as well?
Probably both. I mean, there's a lot of Monday Night Raws.
He's just doing his own like alternate takes on the same adage.
I mean, they just send him out there, and he's got to do 20 minutes of on the mic on to open up a Raw.
Yeah, I mean, like, the chew gum and kick ass thing is like a Rowdy Roddy Piper joke, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't know, like, was he doing his type five? Like, what else? I'm here to kick ass and blink, and I'm all out of eyelashes. Just going through a random object in the room to come up with future takes on that.
Sure. Sure.
I'm here to kick ass and podcast, and I'm all out of hot takes.
Mm-hmm. any final thoughts on Arun and Natalia in their run this season? The improbable Arun and Natalia.
Super nice people, not the best racers. I think they would admit that themselves, but I really like seeing them. Like, yeah. Sometimes it's just nice to see a relationship happen on the show. And so I was very happy to see them get their second chance, especially how freaking heartbroken they were when they were eliminated the first time, especially
yeah.
Arun. So as improbable as it was to have them get to the final four, I'm very happy that these final three teams made it to the end the way that they did. Well, I can still appreciate you know, what they brought to the screen.
Well, when I talked to Arun and Natalia, I asked them about playing again, and they felt like that they were right there, and they felt like that, you know, had a couple of bounces gone their way. They felt like that the self-driving was like a big detriment to their game. I think that they felt like they would have been much better off had it been all like take taxis. That would have like really eliminated the worst part of their game. I think also, you know, I think that for Arun felt like that, you know, if the race went through India, which they were not able to do because of the travel circumstances, that would have been an advantage that they weren't able to take advantage of. So they're ready to come back.
I think they'd be in the mix for an all-star season because I think you have, if you're trying to cast all-stars, you have a bunch of young couples. You have a bunch of like super fit guys that win all the legs. You have a bunch of don't underestimate us because we're pretty girls. Parent-child teams, they all seem to go out at the beginning or last a really long time. And mm-hmm. I think these two have the combination of like having gone far and having an interesting relationship and being great TV. Mm-hmm. So I would cast them for my All-Star season for sure.
Yeah. They're really fun. So hope we can see and hear more from Arun and Natalia.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's talk about the back half of the two-hour finale where we...
Backhand, if you will.
The backhand.
Fault.
Yes. Where we are going to head back to Los Angeles. And so in this leg, we are going to... hop on board the Amazing Race jetliner one more time. Let's see if we can listen in on Phil and his introduction of the teams onto the jetliner.
Destination, Los Angeles, California.
Good morning, Amazing Racers. Welcome aboard Amazing Race Flight 1 to your final destination, Los Angeles, California. Please make sure that you have stowed your backpacks in the overhead lockers or in the seats in front of you. In the unlikely event of an emergency, read your clue. It's in the little thing in the front there. I'm just kidding, guys. It's the emergency thing.
Do you know 100% this was a Phil idea, right? He's like, I got great idea of how to razz him.
I'll do you one better, Mike. I bet Phil did this on literally every time they got on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, I called the Bureau of ATF and... Also, this is not the first time that Phil Cohen has done an airline safety spiel.
Yes.
About a decade ago, I think. There was a New Zealand Airlines safety video that starred Richard Simmons, and it was kind of a publicity stunt.
Richard Simmons?
Yep. Air New Zealand, that was the airline. And Richard Simmons did their safety video, and Phil was in it in, like, 80s garb, popping his eyebrow.
What? I mean, is this a Mad Lib?
This is not a Mad Lib. I'm going to send it to you.
All right. Next time, Tough as Nails Season 4, we're getting Phil on the line specifically to ask him, what was it like filming this airline commercial with Richard Simmons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you right now, if we are going to have a Tough as Nails recap with Phil, where we get to show him embarrassing YouTube clips of himself and make him explain himself, I can supply many.
Okay.
Yeah, I want this to be the version of Jeff Probst going on to Jimmy Fallon and you know, showing that cringy demo reel of him strutting down Hollywood Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, keep our fingers crossed for Tough as Nails Season 4 to come back soon. Okay. Yep.
And I dropped you the YouTube link so you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm looking now. So I mean, was the joke that they were
Should we look at it now?
I don't know how long it is, and I don't remember where Phil is.
Oh, okay.
It's 3.5 minutes. I'm scrubbing through it right now.
Okay. Do you think the listeners will be upset with us, or will they be upset with us if we don't do it?
You can go right now. It's at I have a time.
Yeah. Time. Okay. So here, I'll share my screen. And see if this is a real thing or not, or if this is just an urban legend that Jess is propagating online. Okay,
I believe I've scrubbed past the Richard Simmons part, but I believe if you start around or a rune like one,
you yada yada the best part, Mike.
No, Phil is the bisque. So I think if you start around like a minute 20, that's where Phil should pop up. And he is, I think 80s garb is being a rather liberal description of what he's wearing, because it just seems to me like he's dressed in gym clothes.
All right, why don't we start back around a minute? If you say Phil is coming in 20 seconds, just to get a little bit of the the vibe here. Okay. All right. So here we go. And this is just, what is this a commercial for?
Air New Zealand. It's their safety video, I believe.
Okay. Mile High Madness with Richard Simmons. Okay.
Why did they get Richard Simmons?
Worry if the bag's feeling a little flat, the oxygen will flow automatically. Okay, now for the recommended brace positions. If there's an emergency during takeoff or landing, if you can reach, just lean and brace on the seat in front of you. Or, this is one of my favorites, it's called the duck. Flat feet, elbows outside your thighs, hands on your head,
there's
and
Phil.
Duck on down. Now let's see where your life jacket's at. Down here.
Okay, we're going to need the GIF. We're going to need the GIF, everybody.
See, I for a second I was worried that I had undersold that because Phil looked like he was completely phoning it in.
Yep. Okay.
But he was not phoning it in.
Not phoning it in. For people that are listening to the podcast version, not watching us on YouTube, Mike, could you give us the play-by-play?
Rob, if you want to replay it, you can put it on mute and like maybe quarter speed it. I can try to give my best John Madden here. May he rest in peace.
You got it. Okay. Quarter speed.
So I should mention here again, Phil, again, I would not say he's wearing 80s clothes. He is wearing just like a regular blue t-shirt. But everyone's trying to do the duck, put your head between your knees. Phil's like having none of that S. He's looking at them and then he looks back at the camera, breaks the fourth wall, pops that trademark eyebrow. And then before he goes into the duck and cover. Then we have a bit of a cutaway, like the middle of an Austin Powers movie, where Phil is doing some sort of running man, does a mug to the camera while wearing a yellow sweatband. Then he's doing, I don't know,
the dabbing?
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. And then he's attempting to do like he's possessed by some sort of spirit, or maybe that's an attempt to be the wave. And I think he was about to go into another version of the running man, and they blissfully cut him off.
They cut him off.
Mike, can we do an out without play out list that's like just embarrassing Phil Kogan YouTube videos?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. I mean, how big of a list do you want? That is amazing. Thank you, Jess, for uncovering that treasure trove. I don't know when the next time we'll be able to talk an Amazing Race season is, so this will tide us over in the interim.
Yeah.
And honestly, I worry about maybe we shouldn't do this because we do have a pretty good relationship with Phil.
Yeah.
I don't want to jeopardize it.
Yeah. Like when Bryson Wendell went on the 12 for 12 and went through all of my different looks over the years. Okay. All right. We should still take that down. All right. let's talk about that. Okay. So the teams are going to go to Los Angeles. We didn't get the teams on American soil all together really at all during this amazing race. They all left separately, went to London to start off the race. But now here we go. We're going to get them on the ground in Los Angeles, and we're going to send them to downtown Los Angeles and have a task that involves figuring out a code at a downtown Los Angeles office building.
No, it's the Westin. It's the hotel.
Hotel.
Yeah. So it's essentially like a central, it looks like a molecule, right? Where there's like a central hub and then there are four towers. And then essentially on three of the towers, there was a lockbox with a code
lock
on it.
Lockbox.
Exactly. And so the code for the lockbox was apparently found. I was confused at first because I thought it was you get in the elevator. I was totally Team Ryan and Dusty of like going up and down. Okay, you get in the elevator. No, you had to stand, I think, from the vantage point of the roof to see the elevators, who apparently had like little placards with the code written on them going up and down. And that's what two teams were able to figure out. And poor Ryan and Dusty essentially got Afghanimaled, where they fell out of it real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's when you're out of the finale of the Amazing Race, really, before the first commercial break. That's when you're Afghanimaled.
Yeah, or we could say like Tyler and Corey 1.0, but I think they made up for that in the second time around, but we can officially call it Afghanimal.
Yeah, boy, they're getting closer, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just glad nobody did. I mean, Ryan and Dusty arguably a little bit, but I think they still could have pulled it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, Ryan and Dusty, this was, they were just like all over the place. They really just like never got out of the starting gate.
Yeah, that's fair.
Unfortunately.
It seems strange, and maybe it's just because we got the answer to the clue while Phil was explaining it. It seemed weird to me that people had this much trouble with it. Like, what goes up and down? What can you see going up and down?
The stock market.
A merry-go-round.
Crypto.
Yeah. I don't know. Things you throw up in the air, they go down.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe they just sort of throw things in the air to see if they get the number out of it.
If I throw the clue box in the air, will it come down on the lock and break it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the solution.
Mm-hmm. That's an out-of-the-box solution.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, we should have multiple paths to getting the answer.
All right. So for the other teams, they're going to figure it out more quickly. And so for everybody else, they're going to head down to go break some piñatas. Now, where was this?
At El Pueblo de Los Angeles Historical Monument.
Historical Monument.
That one of your old haunts, Rob?
You know what? That I feel like that since I've left Los Angeles, I said, like, oh, I wish I would, you know, I got to go there. I got to go there. I feel like that I didn't really take advantage of my 14 years there. But now I have, like, a list of things I want to do.
Smash some piñatas at El Pueblo de Los Angeles.
I was watching this with my son this morning, and he now has requested the taco piñata for his birthday party.
I love the taco piñata.
Mm-hmm.
Taco piñata seemed by far the hardest one to break open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is ironic, because a taco is very easily broken open.
If you hit an actual taco with a stick, you would break it.
Smash
right
it to
away,
a million
right?
pieces. Right. Instantly. Instantly. But
if I was designing a task around a taco piñata, why aren't there actual tacos in it?
Wow. Would they be wrapped tacos?
Sure. Why not? But as soon as you hit it, I think that's immaterial. You're just going to have taco stuff all over the place.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah, and then that's like a bunch of birds are going to start flocking everywhere. And then Dusty's going to get confused. He's going to start to want to bring the birds to your doorstep. Like that's a real difficult decision. I don't know. I kind of love this just for the randomness of it. And then it also became partially a Survivor blindfold challenge where specifically the institution of the luchador blindfold mask, I thought was particularly inspired.
This is basically, they wanted to do this. They wanted to do this task in Mexico because they'd Googled all this stuff about Mexico. They had tacos, piñatas, luchador masks. And, you know, it was just not practical to travel there. So they're like, okay, well, we know all this stuff about Mexico. It can't go to waste. We know three things about Mexico.
So, yeah, the teams had to go and find the piñatas. Raquel and Kayla are going to get out of here first. And this did feel like it was a little getting dire for Penn and Kim.
Well, specifically because it looks like, much like the last roadblock, they couldn't leave the little plaza that they were standing on, the callers. And poor Kim is definitely not of the same height as her husband and just didn't see that little donkey just chilling up there making waffles in the corner. Mm-hmm. And so she had to like get down on her belly and crawl around and be like, oh yeah, the little donkey's up there. I do wonder if Penn's height, could he have just like plucked the piñata down and then busted it open?
Hmm.
I'm guessing you're supposed to touch it with the stick only until it hits the ground.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the Arun jumping out of the boat.
Yeah, but I mean, Penn was able to jump up and grab the clue last time for the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
That's true. I think the idea was that you have to, stick the piñata.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things, like, if you do knock part of it on the ground and the clue is in that part, I think you can then touch it with your hand. Mm-hmm. But this is getting into MMA territory. Like, mm-hmm. once you're on the ground, there's different rules.
Ground and pound, sure. Sure.
Yeah, Misha mm-hmm. Tate would have kicked butt at this.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Okay. So we get to the Foley task. All right. Head to Sir. And then from there, we're going to work on Foley. Was this a little too, inside? I'm trying to think of what was the giant inflatable ball that they were in.
The Bulls.
Yeah.
Inside baseball.
Inside baseball. That to get into sound, because I think then I was watching with my son who was confused and he said, Dad, they do this on The Amazing Race? I'm like, well, no, I don't think that they really do this for the episodes of The Amazing Race, but I guess they could if it was a movie.
Hey, I think they do. I think they insert a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I would be surprised if like what percentage of movies and TV shows do not use Foley, just because as advanced as our sound equipment is, I would imagine we want to produce something that's a bit more like you can control the sound effect. So I would imagine a lot of reality TV shows have.
I think
ADR
that they probably do like sound effects of different things, but I don't think that they do that many practical Foley effects on reality shows.
I would guess like if they're trying to heighten the drama of a moment. Like, say someone falls on their butt in the middle of a challenge, they're gonna definitely want that noise to be louder than the boom may have picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And also, I think actually the inflatable bulls, I wouldn't go so far as to call it an iconic moment, but that is a great example of that. Like, adding those bouncing noises and amplifying that noise definitely adds something to the experience of watching it. Like, you want that noise to be bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, I definitely feel like they have sound effects. I just say, like, in terms of, like, the practical, like, somebody, like there's nobody, like, with the, like the wind chimes that's giving you... Like, they just have that.
Well,
that
no, sound well, no, effect. No, no, yeah. They're cheapo depots. They recorded that years ago, and they're just repurposing that.
Yeah.
But no, more so when it comes to, like, things that happen, quote unquote, in the field. I can imagine that. Now, look, are they using things you find in your shed to make them? Probably not, but they wanted to simplify the job here.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd be surprised how much stuff they take out of a random shed to make this stuff. But this brings me to the point of, I really feel like next season, I want there to be a guy off camera with the cymbal. And every time you do something wrong, they do that live. Mm-hmm. I think that would add a lot.
Mm-hmm. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the task judge, really. Like, you don't even need a judge. You just look to them and they give you, like, the cymbal, if you got it right, or like the whap, whap.
Yeah,
to get it wrong.
I mean, honestly, I volunteered to do that job.
Didn't we have that last season when they were in South America, right?
Yeah, it was when they were doing they were assembling the trucks, right? And wasn't there like a guy? No, maybe it was something in that challenge in Colombia. Was like when they had someone up playing the trombone. You're like a wham, 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 wham.
Oh, the circus task.
Yeah. That's what it was. Yes, the circus task with them walking across the tightrope.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, if you could have that. And then Penn could be like, all right, can we give it up for the sound effects, guys? Are they doing a great job or what? Well,
that's how we know we didn't have those live because we didn't have Penn pointing them out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this was meta AF, but it only makes sense for a Foley challenge to close your mouth, open your ears, and watch what happens.
Yeah. All right. Was this easy to follow along how they were doing?
Well, yeah, actually, yes, Rob, I'll point out maybe my favorite shot in the whole finale. You know how I hate it when they try to pretend that people are closer together than they think.
Mm-hmm.
Like where they'll show somebody and then they'll show somebody that was clearly like an hour later and they try to pretend they're in the same vicinity. Mm-hmm. We know they were in the same vicinity, and I was all set to cynically believe, no, this is just like Kayla and Raquel are running away with it, until we see them get out at the sound effects place and then Kim and Penn pull up right behind them and they get out. They're like, oh, there's Kayla and Raquel. I was like, now I know we've got a race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I'm excited.
Yeah.
There was a fun moment where, you know, Raquel's like, are the Kim and Penn here? I don't hear them. And Kayla's like, it's a soundproof room, which would also make sense for Foley purposes.
And the door is closed. Right.
Yeah. From other Foley work would completely ruin the job.
Right.
Which also makes this a brilliant challenge because you have no idea if someone else is there, you have no idea if they got out in 10 minutes or if they're going to be there for an hour.
Okay. Jess and Mike, can you ID all of the clips that we saw?
Well, season 24, inflatable bulls.
Yes, which, yeah, I'm surprised that was a top five moment from The Amazing Race from season 24.
Yeah, they're still trying to pretend season 24 happened.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's less so iconic and more so sound effect inducing, I suppose.
That's the real reason. That it's fun. It's an easily foliable moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more like not necessarily objectively iconic, but... iconic in terms of Foley moments, like great sound effect moments.
Okay.
I'm surprised they didn't have to Foley in Dave complaining about being U-turned because he's old.
Okay. All right. So that was one. All right. Yeah. We had Pie in the Face.
Pie in the Face is season 14.
Maybe. I thought at first it was season 32.
It wasn't last season, right?
No, it wasn't.
Last season was the cake that they had to like run over themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's the one where they had to, is that the same one where they had to hand whip all that cream?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then they had to eventually, because then everyone was throwing pies at each other.
Yeah. Wikipedia says that was season 14. Yeah. And it was Amanda and Chris, which was one of those teams that like everybody's trying to make them happen. And I couldn't tell you a single thing they did.
Your prototypical young, boring dating couple from like the mid-aughts of Amazing Race.
In fact, there were two different couples named Chris and Amanda. I'm not making that up.
Love Chris and Amanda's.
Cremandas. And of course we have
Cremandas. This,
the actually iconic watermelon.
Okay.
The actually iconic ox and the actually iconic hay bales.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hay bales, really nice on our part talking, invoking that last week. And now we get to see it here.
Yep. Again, things we manifest.
Yeah. Okay. So they had a couple of decent ones and then we need to fill out the Foley five.
Foley five.
Yeah. The Foley Five greatest moments of the greatest sounds of the Amazing Race.
Yeah, but this was fun, but actually I think the more we got into it, the less interesting it was, to be completely honest. To your question, Rob, about like, was it easily trackable? I don't know, because I don't remember what sound effects were supposed to be used, right? Like, we saw it briefly. The watermelon obviously had the sound you could easily associate, right? The like sling forward and then the hit back. But like, my ox is broken. Okay, you're doing what? Colin wiping the mud off of his arms and the whipping sound.
You should have to also do his voice. Like, my ox is broken. Like, I wanted the line reading.
My ox is broken. This is BS.
Yeah, well, somebody should. The other person should have to bleep the profanity.
Yeah, that should be good. That's perfect.
You're like how the late Bob Saget used to narrate America's Funniest Home Videos. Like, oh, yep. I'm Claire. I'm going to sling a watermelon here. Oh, I got hit in the face.
My ox is broken. Yeah. That would be great. All right.
I mean, they were getting dinged for talking while they were foleying.
No talking. All right.
No talking.
So Raquel and Kayla get out first. Okay. But they ask for directions from a guy in the parking lot. And then Penn and Kim quickly, that's like, oh, let's ask the same guy for directions. Raquel is trying to mouth to this guy, don't tell them.
That always
works.
What if
he did it? Like, what incentive does this guy have? Just being a jerk?
Yeah. Like, hey. Like, I don't want any part of your drama, ma'am.
Yeah, I mean, all this does is like maybe you're on the show for 30 more seconds being a dick.
I don't know. If they had offered him like $50,000, do you think he would have done it?
Well,
$50,000.
It's payable on delivery. Like, it's like it's going to be like another 4 months before we get the $1 million check. And.
That is true. Let me get your information, sir. I will PayPal you $50,000. Yeah,
but I don't think they knew that Penn and Kim were coming out. So that's sort of like, hey, I'm in a race for around the world. If you know the information that like that I'm about to tell you, I will give you $50,000 if I win this race. Like, do you understand? Like, do not give it to anybody else.
That wastes a lot of time, too. And I
And also, I think incentivize. This is like why we don't torture for information, where I feel like I don't know the answer, but I'm going to try now.
Yeah, the guy would be like, wait, I don't negotiate with terrorists. I'm not giving you directions either.
And I do know. I'm not telling. Okay.
Yeah, or he just like, as soon as they make that offer, he turns around and he doesn't give them the directions, but he gives them to Kim and Penn.
Yeah. All right. So... we are going to go to the home of the LA Galaxy. I didn't get to take in any LA Galaxy games when I was in Los Angeles.
You never went to Dignity Health Sports Park?
Were you not a Beckham guy?
No.
Did he play for the Galaxy? That was when he came over?
Yeah. Dignity Health Sports Park. See, I thought that maybe they played at SoFi, but no.
They have
their own.
I also loved, unfortunately, poor Ryan and Dusty are like, great, we're going there. It's going to be a soccer challenge. We're going to beast this. Nope, you are technically doing a tennis theme challenge within the soccer stadium.
Yeah, which was a little wild.
Well, I think they do other things at the soccer stadium.
Right. But it wasn't like they were doing like the U.S. Open or something like that.
I feel like the U.S. Open happen?
It happens here. Mike.
Yeah.
It happens in Queens.
In Queens.
I don't know. I don't go to. I'm from Connecticut. I've taken in enough tennis in my lifetime. Yes. Okay. I bleed yellow fleece.
Yes. I'm Mike Bloom. That I know every minute fact about every other thing.
Listen, this is my blind spot.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I go on to Jeopardy, I swear to God, the answer is U.S. Open locations. Kiss that money goodbye. I'm so sorry, Mayim.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, it looks like that the Dignity Health Sports Park is in South L.A., like I guess closer to like Orange County, Long Beach.
Yeah, I mean, do we need to pull up the map and have a long conversation about which freeway you take to get there?
So
because I understand that's something LA people do.
Yeah, just get on the 405.
Is that the impression of that guy that gave them directions?
Just get out of here.
Get out of here, Kayla.
Raquel.
Raquel, yeah. What are you doing here?
Okay. So, Dignity Health Sports Park, site of our final task, and the teams had to match things up. Okay, this was an interesting challenge, and I wanted to play along at home, but I was struggling with keeping up with what they were doing and answering the questions.
I don't know how somebody did this, but on the Wikipedia page for Amazing Race 33, there is currently the entire list of all the questions and what the answers were.
Okay, let's take a look at that. Okay, so it's Amazing Race Wiki or the actual Wikipedia project?
The Wikipedia page
here, I'll
for the
drop
Amazing
the
Race.
Link.
Now, it's interesting because there were, and this is where it becomes multifaceted, is that there were obviously answers to the questions, but then there were sort of like answers within the answers. Right. You know, if the answer was, hey, he greeted you, you know, he pointed you to the pit stop and that was Napoleon, then there were two pictures of Napoleon, right? One with the big hat and one with the small hat. And so there was even answers within those answers of, okay, it's Napoleon, but which one's the right Napoleon?
Yeah.
Which is why Kim studying paid off so well in that she did caricatures, I suppose, of the people that she ran into. So they remembered big hat Napoleon.
Yeah. So some of these are, I mean, like, you took this to number 10. I don't even know what that means. Is that leg 10?
I think it was the pier that you had to go to.
I mean, again, these are not, so these are not questions where we get to play along with.
You would not be able to play along with this, especially, like, they ask about candy here. I did not even notice until, like, they cut back to Ryan and Dusty breaking their piñatas. I didn't even notice that candy was falling out of these things. Like, there certainly wasn't a cascade of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So it was also hard to follow along with, you know, who had what wrong and how they're going to figure things out. And as we said with Raquel and Kayla, the shape of the coin, Mike, were teams supposed to, get a memory of the coin before they handed it off to the Oracle of Delphi?
I mean, it could be either way where that thing is burned in their retinas as to the stupid coin that they were looking for. But to your point, I think it was much more likely, get this stupid thing out of my sight. I don't want to see this ever again.
I think you could say like burned in their hand, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, of if it was hot enough on the pavement that day, if you had the branding on your hand.
Are you talking about the doorknob in Home Alone?
That was both places. Oh. Both movies had that.
Do you think Kevin McAllister painted the doorknob? And that's why the wet bandits got paint on their hands.
Mm-hmm. They painted it red. Yeah, so they didn't know it was red hot.
I'm just imagining Ryan and Dusty as the wet bandits.
Yeah. Okay, would they be good? Well, first off, look, Ryan and the wet bandits shared...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
There's one crucial difference there, Rob.
Yes. Big difference. Big difference, for sure.
But I'm just imagining Dusty... I'm imagining Joe Pesci now roaring like a lion a la Dusty, and now I need to see this.
Mm-hmm.
I can see this, yeah. Somebody make us the deep fake.
Mm-hmm. You got a dead ass buddy here.
Yeah. Both teams had, both of. Now I'm imagining Marvin Harrion in The Amazing Race. Who do you think would do the majority of the roadblocks?
Now Harry is Joe Pesci. Okay. Harry would make Marv do a lot of the roadblocks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, get in the rowboat, you idiot.
Mm hmm. Marv and Harry, they are a team of. Cat burglars turned straight. You know, I think they're good at like climbing up things and like getting into small places.
Cracking safes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they would have a skill set, I think.
Yeah, the ziplining task. Like,
ziplining.
Zip line.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Just no kids at the pit stop.
They'll, no kids.
They'll be triggered.
Yeah. They don't do anything with kids. Okay. All right. So. Yeah, we're following along, and then eventually Penn and Kim get it.
Yeah. Again, like, I really give kudos to Kim here because this has become a meme right within the Amazing Race podcasting, Jess. You have been driven up the wall, up the painted door by people saying, oh, is this the memory test? Is this the memory test? Insert butterfly meme here. So good on Kim for really casting a wide, yet very specific net of being like, I have a feeling it's going to be maybe everything. I haven't seen any patterns yet, though Penn did believe it was going to be about stairs because apparently they climbed a good number of stairs throughout their time in the Amazing Race.
Mm-hmm.
How would you do that? what would that look like?
It could be a, like, match up the number of stairs with the place you were at.
Oh.
That's evil and boring. I want evil and interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
The worst kind of evil, the boring evil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Penn and Kim, they're head to the home of the LA Galaxy, and they do it. It was a fun moment at the finish line where Kim is like, okay, well, you're not going to say we have a penalty or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I could see they're chronic overthinkers, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them feeling like this can't be it. This isn't the actual end of the race. What else is happening? Is Phil going to make us do some math or something?
Mm-hmm.
So, and on that note, actually, speaking of the team that did have to turn back and got a penalty, Kim and Penn are some stat bringers here. So overall, according to Amazing Race Reddit, they are currently a fifth highest average racing record amongst all teams and third of winners behind Rachel and Dave and Megan and Shane from season 15. So again, for them sort of sneaking up on some of us expectations-wise, they end up making the podium for all-time performances by a winning team on The Amazing Race.
Wow.
And honestly, if your name is Kim and you're in your 40s, I like your odds on The Amazing Race.
Interesting.
Yes, we should also mention as well, they mentioned this briefly in like their little dramatic build-ups to the final. Like they are, I believe, have the oldest average age for a winning team on The Amazing Race US, just edging out Chip and Kim. I believe Penn was 47 and Kim was 45 and they were 46 and 44. So they are, you know, Dave still has the record for oldest person to win the Amazing Race, but they are still by like cumulative and average age, the oldest team to win as of 33 season.
Ryan and Dusty said about Penn and Kim, like, oh, congratulations on being the oldest team to win the Amazing Race. Was that a dig?
I don't know if it's a dig.
Yeah. I felt like, Mike, was that a little bit like Misha on Celebrity Big Brother talking about like, oh, you know, it's so great to be here with all of you that are older than me.
Oh, yeah. The old Mirai Nagasu. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. No,
sorry, I'm called Mirai.
More of a forehanded compliment than a backhanded compliment if we're using tennis jargon. I do think Dusty, there might be a clip that I play in the tar pit of Dusty was maybe not in the best headspace at the finish line, might have messed up his words. So if I think he did mean to imply like, oh, well, congratulations for being so old and winning the Amazing Race. I do not know if that was the intention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Congratulations to Raquel and Kayla. They come in second. They were right there. Tough break for them because
it really sucked.
If they were on like almost any other season, they win.
I mean, and what screwed them up was not only the coin, but something from this very leg. They pulled the old Survivor 41, where they did a flashback to that leg. One of the pictures was of the candy from the pinata. And because, and Raquel and Kayla admitted this to me in their exit interview, that like, they weren't paying attention to the candy. They were just freaking out trying to get the pieces of the clues. So when they had these pictures, they're like, I don't know. I guess it would look like regular candy instead of the red and yellow candy that it apparently was.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, the person who would notice the candy was wearing a freaking blindfold.
That's true. Yeah.
You're not going to take off.
Was that evil and boring or evil and interesting?
No, this was evil and interesting.
Okay.
But I feel like I'm doing pinatas. The first thing I'm going to do when I take off the blindfold after I get the clue, I'm going to scoop up the candy.
Mm-hmm.
That was also a lame clue. I'm reading back like the little questions right now, riddles. It fell out as well is the clue for the candy.
It fell out as well. What else fell out? Did something else fall out? Was one of the clues like this fell out?
The
clue fell out. This is just implying like none of them, they don't connect. It's just more so, hey, you know, you found this under a rock. You painted this. It's plated correctly for the Domades, but that I think the most awkward one is it fell out as well, which maybe implies this might have been added at the last second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Maybe they had a couple of, you know, with all the Mexico stuff, they had a few pictures of the candy that they might have gotten.
It is interesting. I believe, because I think actually we also did get a question of like, are they going to do a memory challenge considering the blip, but I'm fairly sure that no pre-blip stuff was in any of the clues.
Yeah, there's no pre-blip stuff.
Yeah.
There might have been pre-blip stuff on the rackets, but all these clues are pointing to post-blip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Should they have had like one thing? Like he works in the subway.
No, not Gigi Ben. He couldn't find his trousers.
Yeah. I mean, not every team did that side of the detour, but they could have had something. No?
I mean, what was there? There was, like, you could build a bagpipe. That was one of the things.
Mm-hmm. He had snacks with the queen.
It also, it feels like some of this might have been somewhat personalized to what they...
Oh!
Like, I think there was a point where Kim was trying to pull the right rowboat, and I think I heard her say something about, we didn't take Vasco da Gama.
Oh, that, well, no, I think, I don't know if it was personalized. I think that's where they got screwed up, is I would imagine, like, there were two, or maybe there were multiple things, and they're like, oh, did we choose the wrong rowboat? I think it was ultimately fine. That'd be super meticulous. So they're like, let's pick the very specific rowboat that they each chose to take. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of them was the door. Like, you probably want their door.
Yeah, Raquel and Killa did end up hanging the one that they painted, right? So I don't know, maybe you have a good point, Jess, now the more that I think about it. Maybe it was personalized.
Mm-hmm. Which, I love that, if so. Because then you can rely on, like, detours.
You can. Yeah, yes. Like, with the fish coming.
Yes.
That would have been a great clue. You can.
And you will. Yeah.
You can. Yes. Paint this.
Yeah. Okay. See, Maze Runner 33.
It's a thing that happened.
Any other thoughts?
I mean, Kim and Penn, like, they're an awesome team to win for many reasons. Mm-hmm. I thought they were really great characters. And I know, again, there was a lot of trepidation with YouTubers coming on. I think, to be candid, I think Megan and Joey set a trend initially of, like, what YouTubers are. But I think between, like, Tyler and Corey and Kim and Penn as well, like, the earnestness but still energy that they brought, I absolutely loved. And I really love their story. Like, we didn't even focus on that. That Kim's the entire storyline, right, was like Kim saying, I just don't want to disappoint Penn, her own anxiety, I'm doing the best I can. And Penn even points this out at the end. Kim is the one who saves the day. Yeah. Kim is the one that's like, because she was so anxious, because she took such meticulous notes because she was overly preparing for something at the end, it prepared them to pass Raquel and Kayla. Like, she was able to weaponize, essentially, what might have been something to her detriment. And, like, that's just a really cool theme. And so I love that story and just what they represented in addition to, like, the entire Holderness family of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it felt like, ironically, you get these people that are very, like, they're YouTube personalities, and they bring something into the race that I think is more real than we've seen on many seasons of The Amazing Race. Like, really, through them, we got this feeling of, like, what of that mental and emotional toll that the show can take on you and how you cope with it. And I also love that on two different teams, we had a preconceived notion of, like, who the star of the team was, and we were wrong. Like, I was sure, because Penn is kind of the front man in most of their videos, I was sure this was going to be all about, like, Penn's ADHD and how it works for him and how it works against him. And it turned out that Kim was the one that really went on the emotional journey and really kind of rocked the challenge and brought home the $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have Ryan and Dusty. We assumed, like, Dusty was the friend that Ryan had to bring along because you have to have two people on a team. And Dusty turned out to be, like, the secret gem, maybe the most interesting person. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys end up getting the origin story behind how Ryan and Dusty ended up on the race?
No.
No.
So Ryan was originally supposed to be on with his dad, but his dad got an injury in 2020. And so Dusty ended up just, like, getting the call almost, like, before they took off and decided to get on there. So imagine the parallel universe where Dusty is not a part of The Amazing Race 33. With no offense to Ryan's dad, I don't want to see that universe.
Yeah,
I'm sure
darkest
Ryan's
timeline.
So, yeah, again, like, when you get an Amazing Race season like this, with a pandemic, with everything else that's going on in the world, we're not in the darkest timeline, because this was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we got Dusty. So
lots of great stuff.
That explains a lot about how he came in so unprepared for it and came back like a beast.
Mm-hmm.
That explains a lot of that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Very much like a beast at certain points.
Yes. Like, you know, a friendly beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was much like Rob Schneider in The Animal, just, like, I don't know, injecting himself with animal DNA in between.
Of course.
All right. Well,
Dusty probably loves The Animal.
I didn't get a chance to ask him, but
We'll ask. We could ask him. Okay.
Yeah, we'll ask.
All right. So I guess we'll stop it here for today. Again, check out our interviews with the top four teams also on YouTube. If you want to, I'm sure you're watching the YouTube video now after we went back and looked at that Phil clip. So be sure to check that out and check out Mike's coverage over on parade.com. I do not think that this will be the last Amazing Race 33 coverage that we will bring you. We'll try to see what else we can work on for the future. And if some interesting things develop, we'll let you know.
Well, overall thoughts about the season?
I mean, top tier, like maybe top five for me.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Loved it.
Is that results oriented in terms
no.
of?
Yeah. No, not at all. It's like, it's everything. It's in terms of what did they have to overcome to bring us this season and how they managed to make it exciting despite everything. And then this final leg is definitely a top five final leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would say, I mean, if we're doing like, you know, if I'm doing three tiers of 11, it's definitely going to be in that middle tier. I would try to figure out where I really, really liked this group of teams, particularly like I just think like that top five. I guess we spent so much time with them, but like I really, really enjoyed them. There is some weirdness, admittedly, that I can't necessarily get past in comparison to other seasons, like stuff that happened with the blip or, you know, the fact that it did feel like a lot of legs did not have that much climacticism to them, considering just like due to the self-driving, how far spread out things are. But I did not gripe that much considering I just had a lot of fun hanging out with hanging out with these people every week.
Yeah, I agree. I don't keep Amazing Race season ranking. So I really like the group, especially, you know, this top half that ended up going deep into the race. But I just feel like in terms of the season as a whole, I felt that like we were a little bit like dealing with like the manual transmission of just like a lot of like start and stop with the elimination every other week. And even then, you know, we brought back teams that were eliminated. I just felt like in terms of like the season, I felt like struggled to keep momentum, especially with we're spending two legs in one place. So, I mean, they did the best that they could with all of the circumstances. So but I just feel like in terms of an Amazing Race season, you know, it was more vibes than necessarily a great season.
Yeah, I think you have to put an asterisk on it because, I mean, think about this. 2 years ago this time, I was thinking that's the last we've ever seen of the Amazing Race that's not coming back. It's dead. Mm-hmm. So it's just the fact that we're still getting in it. It looks like it's still alive and kicking and healthy for a long time to come, I think is down to this cast and these challenges. And that I feel like I give it a little extra credit for that.
Yeah,
that's true. Because admittedly, the first three legs pre-blip, I don't think any of us were actually very high on it, right? We were like, what are they doing? The teams weren't incredibly sticking out. The task seemed a little boring and like a little simple. And so I will like give it up, Matt. Give it up for the crew.
Can we get a shot of these guys? Yeah.
Because what they were able to do, again, it wasn't perfect. We certainly have had our complaints about the leg design even post-blip. But like what they were able to do, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, really invoked an old school atmosphere that had got me hooked on the Amazing Race in the first place, where again, you may not see that much changing places, but you're like spending time with these teams and you're doing fun, culturally relevant things around the world, or in this case around Europe. So I can't complain too much. I had a lot of fun. And especially this group of final three teams, I loved. This might be one of my favorite final three teams in a while.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it there. Jess, what's coming up for you?
What's coming up for me, we had some scheduling problems this week over on Post Show Recaps. So we are going to be Monday night. Josh Wigler, Brooklyn Zed, and I are going to be getting together to talk about the first two episodes of Killing Eve. And so far, it is a very fun season. Very exciting stuff. And then Chappelle, AJ Mass, Josh Wigler, and I talk about The Walking Dead every week. And that is an interesting show. It is not the show that you yeeted out the window 3 years ago, Rob. It is a very different show now, and you wouldn't even recognize it, I think.
Oh, my God.
It's very bizarre. They have done an interesting pivot, and we're having a lot of fun talking about that. And then this weekend, Mike Bloom and I are hopefully going to find some time to talk about season two of Picard, which is dropping today.
Very curious to check that out. Yeah.
And it is out now. I might actually, after we hang up, I might go watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on with me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Jess, great job all season long. And hope we can chat some more about The Amazing Race 33 soon. Mike Bloom, what's coming up for you? The Power Strip.
Oh, boy. Serving up some stuff for you. Fault. All right. So like Rob mentioned, interviews up at parade.com. I believe right now at the time we're recording this, I have Penn and Kim and Raquel and Kayla up. Dusty, as well as Aruna and Natalia, should be up probably, I'd say, in the next 24 hours. My son got his tonsils out, so I am going to try to take care of him while posting these interviews. But that's all up at parade.com. If you are a Celebrity Big Brother fan, I have those interviews up. And if you are a Survivor fan, starting next week when the season starts, I'll be doing exit press for that as well. So just a constant stream of coverage of reality television. Of course, if you missed it as well, I have preseason interviews with all 18 contestants. I also did podcasts with you, Rob, where we reviewed those interviews and talked through the contestants. Those are all up in their various ways. If for some reason you haven't taken a look at this really interesting cast for Survivor 42, you have the avenues to do so. Then over on post-show recaps, Jess mentioned Picard Upload, which I'm doing with Jess Sterling. We just announced coverage of that. That's an Amazon series that is coming out for season two next week. And we just are going to be releasing a season one recap podcast where we just recap the show that's to come, remind everybody, because it aired in May 2020 when things were very, very different, before we jump into season two coverage coming then, as well as Lost and The X-Files. And then lastly, jumping back to reality TV for a second, I always have the pleasure of getting to jump on the line with Shane and Gus to talk international Survivor. It was merge week on Australian Survivor. The fan base was not particularly happy, but Shannon and I had a really fun time. Talked for almost 3.5 hours.
Oh my God.
About general shenanigans. There's a lot to discuss. There was a lot to pick apart about people's reception to stuff in general. So we took it all apart. Essentially, TLDR, we come and we say, you don't need to worry. Things are going to be okay. That's our thesis statement of the podcast. So come in.
I need more of that in my life. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I've got for now, in addition to probably some other stuff that's going to spring up. But all of that can be found pumped out on occasion and pimped out at a Mike Bloom type, as I am doing
pumping
my dance.
And pimping.
Yeah. Row and a toe, pump and pimp. Come on, mm-hmm. Phil. These are our detour ideas for next season.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, great job as well, Mike Bloom, here all season long. Of course, on Rob's podcast, we're still pumping and pimping on a bunch of your favorite shows. Survivor, Big Brother Canada, Joe Millionaire, 90 Day Fiancé, and much more, all at robiswebsite.com. Subscribe to both Rob's podcast and Reality TV Rehab Ops. Click robiswebsite.com/subscribe to get links for everything we're doing. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.